presidential primary season is in full swing. Today, we hear from the field. I'm Kevin Fever, and this is The Weekly. Candidates on both sides of the aisle are out of the trail, looking to convince voters that they are the right person to follow the Sandoval administration. We are fortunate enough to have several of them on today. Vice President Beau joins us first, as the only Libertarian Republican publicly seeking the nomination. Then, I'm joined by Senator Epsilon and Congressman Viper Darius, who are both seeking the left's coalition support. Governor Ted Dett had to cancel, unfortunately, but we hope to have him on a future episode. Vice President Beau, welcome to The Weekly.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. So, obviously, we're sitting here on Friday night, and you have just been relieved as acting president. Now, explain to me why on earth, after getting a little taste of that job, you would want to do it again.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed my time as acting president, serving while President Sandoval, of course, had his surgery and recovering from that. And I just think that, you know, I was able to do a meaningful amount within that short period, but there is still so much more to do. And even throughout this full 4-month term with President Sandoval and I, we were not able to accomplish, and we won't be, everything that we wanted to. And there's still more that I would personally like to achieve that maybe deviates from the agenda that President Sandoval and I were elected on. Mm-hmm. And so that's why that I would like to serve in the White House for a full 4-month term to achieve those goals.
Okay. Can you, I guess, talk a little bit about where those deviations might be? How would a Beau presidency look different from a Sandoval presidency?
I think that a Beau presidency, a Beau administration, the Sandoval administration has focused a lot more on executive action, increased diplomatic relations and things like that. A Beau administration would, of course, continue that, and foreign policy is going to be as important as ever in the campaign and moving forward, especially after the past 3 years where we have moved farther and farther away from relationships with our allies around the world, becoming less globally involved. And we're starting to see that turn the tide, the consensus, the status quo break that we've seen from presidents on the left and right for the past 3 years. So I would want to continue doing that, and I would also want to focus more on domestic policy and a legislative agenda. Mm-hmm. My own, yeah.
Okay. What is one policy area, can be foreign or domestic, that does not get a lot of attention that you would want to bring attention to if you're elected?
That doesn't get a lot of attention. That's an interesting question. I think that one could be the military, which is I would say it's more foreign than domestic, but there's a mix involved, and this all ties into the foreign policy decisions of past administrations of slashing the military, and we're not going to have a sustainable military, and we don't at this moment in time, in my opinion. And we've seen that with outdated things, and in the drone incident with China last year, we were only able to detect that when it was right outside of our waters. And that's a big problem, in my opinion, that led to that whole debacle. And past campaigns and administrations have not discussed foreign policy, not discussed military increases or military policy much at all, mm-hmm. especially recently.
Okay. So obviously we're coming off of the February state elections here, and the Libertarian Republicans had a bit of a rough time. Does the trend of the right struggling concern you as you look into a nationwide campaign? Or do you see a coalition that is maybe struggling to come together so far, but you might be able to bring together?
Well, of course, we did okay in the midterm elections. We were able to get the senators needed to sustain vetoes, and the state elections were not as bad as they could have been. There were there was a possibility that we had like one seat left over across the nation after the state election. And while the results weren't great, we saw increased ground in Puerto Rico. We saw some comfortable margins in Jefferson. So while they weren't great, they weren't as bad as they could be. And I think that presidential elections are a lot different than elections for legislative bodies and for governors. In the November federal election, which President Sandoval and I were elected, of course, there was basically a left sweep in the House, with only one Libertarian having won at the time, despite the landslide results in the presidential election for the right. So I think that it's a different playing field for the presidential election than for the state elections or for the midterms.
Okay. Before we get to the nationwide landscape, of course, you need to take the nomination. The left has been kind of ablaze with activity in the last couple of days, including a dead of night announcement from Congressman Viber Darius right after Senator Epsilon announced his run. It's been much quieter on the right, both in announcements and in speculation. Do you anticipate a primary challenge, or are you right now just focused on getting to March?
Primary challenge is possible, and I'm confident that if one sprung up outside of a few individuals that I could win a primary. Of course, we don't have the same pool of individuals that the left has. They have a lot more people in higher offices, whereas us and the Libertarians we have only a handful of individuals. If there is a primary, it's not going to be as large of a field as the left-wing one. And either way, I'm confident that I could win a contested primary. So my eyes are set on the general election, which is going to be an interesting and a tough contested election.
Okay. Has there been any discussion, at least that you're willing to share, with the new, or I guess, I don't know, they survived an election, the relatively new Pyro Party, seeing as they're sort of on the right, kind of heterodox, but more so than the other parties. Has there been any talk of cooperation there? Are they planning on fielding a candidate that you're aware of? Any possible joint primary situation like what the left does? What's that particular aspect of the campaign looking like at this stage?
I do plan on reaching out to the Pirate Party and their leadership to see if we can build that coalition and have... Of course, you said their platform was a little unorthodox, and maybe their key priorities don't exactly align up with mine, but the overarching goals of a right-wing presidency, overall a right-wing legislative agenda, I think, even if there are deviances, that we can unite with the Pirate Party despite disagreements that they might have with us and we have with them. So yes, I do plan on reaching out to see if they're interested in working with my campaign.
Okay. Two questions left that I have prepared for you, and then we can talk about whatever you'd like. Did that short time with you in the acting presidency provide any insights into the job itself that you can't necessarily get from the vice presidency or any other position? And did it inform at all how you would like to take your administration?
I think it showed me the importance of collaboration with other high-ranking individuals in the administration. Of course, we just during the past week while I was acting president, we freed Salvatore Basile, the hostage in China, and that was through multiple discussions and collaboration with individuals in the State Department, other national security officials. So I think that it's not. Of course, the president is one person, but it's not a one-man job. They have a team there for them. And if I do win the upcoming election, I would not be more elated to work with holdovers that we would keep from the Sandoval administration or my own cabinet, because that I would say that's like the single most important part of a presidency is having a team of people who you can work with, even if they have political disagreements. If you put them in a position were in that specific department, that agency, that topic, that you do agree with them and you can foster a working relationship, I would say that was the biggest insight for me. Could you repeat the second question?
Sure. I don't think I asked the second question yet.
My
other one was back when we were doing the paper edition of this publication, I always asked to end these presidential interviews, what would you say is the biggest obstacle to you winning the White House?
I would say it's a nation that's shifting leftwards. Of course, I would say for the past year or so, up until probably September or October, November of last year, there was a pretty healthy balance of individuals on the left and individuals on the right, whether that be a voting base or elected officials, appointed officials, mm-hmm. whatever. And that just simply is not the case anymore. The country is overwhelmingly left, which is why it's important for my campaign and for myself to try to reach out to those individuals on the left who maybe aren't satisfied with the options in the left-wing primary and say, okay, this is where we may have disagreements on this topic, but we agree on all these, and this is where we can work together and focus.
All right. That was it for me. Do you have anything else you'd like to talk about while I have you here?
No, I just thank you for having me. It was great. I'm glad to talk to anyone about my campaign, my goals, and this past week in the White House. So, yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you again for coming on, and good luck out on the trail.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Senator Epsilon, welcome back.
Thank you, Kevin. Good to be here.
I'm glad we could get you on. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a bit.
What were you, like our second episode, maybe? Way back when.
Yeah, way back. That was a long one, though.
It was. I don't think we're going to do that today. Maybe. We'll see. Who knows? So I guess since I'm spacing these interviews out over the weekend here, I should say this is Saturday evening, just in case anything comes up that's kind of time-sensitive. Mm-hmm. So obviously the big news of the day and the theme of this episode, you are running for president, as you declared a couple days ago.
Yes.
I'm just going to start with a very broad why you, why now?
That's an excellent question. And really, I think any objective observer can see that the way that the current occupant of the executive branch is
some might say president.
Yes. The current president behaving in office is not really meeting the standards of what the situation that we're in. They're not active. They're not fighting for the people. They're actively working against the people, oftentimes supporting corporate welfare over the welfare of the people. And so I believe that with my record of fighting for the people, which I believe I've shown since day one, since I began in public service, that I have something to offer to those that we serve. And so if I'm lucky enough to even win the GOP-SDP joint nomination, which there's some pretty fierce competition there, we have some excellent candidates.
I have no doubt we will get to that later.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Then I think I can really make a difference in the lives of the people and keep pushing the kind of policies, really meaningful policies that I've been pushing since I've basically been in office. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm not quite alone in saying this, that you are pretty widely seen as mostly a legislative individual, not exclusively because that's where you spent your time, but just in your expertise, in your actions, that seems to be the direction that you've taken your career on. Why take this moment to shift your focus to the executive when your experience in that field might be a little bit less solidified than some of your opponents, I suppose?
Yeah, less comprehensive. I mean, it's true. I don't have any executive experience, at least not directly. However, I do believe that my meaningful policy that I've been, and my extensive relations with members of Congress really makes me the most effective person to be in the presidency right now, because, you know, we can get somebody in there with executive experience. Sandoval had executive experience. You know, he was governor of Dixie, to my understanding. It didn't lead anywhere. If you can't work with your Congress, if you don't have those relationships with your Congress, if you can't get things through Congress, which I have proven I can multiple times, for example, the Student Loan Relief Act, which I've passed twice now through the Congress, but as noted before, vetoed by the president both times. You have to work with Congress to get anything done as president, anything at least particularly meaningful. And the reason why I'm running is because we keep passing. We have a Congress now that actually works for the people. It was a very difficult job to get that. We worked very hard to get this majority that we have right now in the Congress. But every time we pass a bill now, it's getting vetoed, you know, almost every single time. And so it's important, as I've been in the legislature, is all these important, meaningful landmark bills just aren't making it over the finish line because the president vetoes them. And so we need somebody in there who will work with Congress and for the people instead of for these other interests that have unfortunately, as we've seen recently, really clouded the Libertarian Republican Party. If you saw that with computer guy's recent revelations.
Careful with those comparisons there.
Yes.
I do want to push back a little bit, and I'm trying to tone down my libertarian shieldness since I left public life outside of sitting in my garage and recording the show. But you mentioned being able to work with Congress as an important trait in any executive, and then you are discussing how many of the bills that you and the current left-controlled Congress are running into the roadblock of the current executive. Do you think that there is an issue in the sense that what you're essentially asking for is not cooperation between the branches, but uniformity in ideology between the branches? Because from what I'm hearing, the way that you phrased that was, if only Sandoval agreed with us, we could get things done. It's not that you are bringing an expertise in terms of getting the branches to cooperate for the collective.
I can understand that viewpoint. It happens to be one that I disagree with in this case. But sure. In this case, I would say one is, for example, I mean, on a particular example, the Student Loan Relief Act we passed twice now. I think that shows how much the public really supports this. Because that's not a small issue. That's something big that the left has definitely campaigned on a lot. But second of all is the executive isn't even reaching out to people, really. They've done very little outreach. They've not worked with us pretty much at all. Really, I don't even quite know what the goals of this administration are at all, really. Like, what are their domestic policy goals right now? What legislation are they sponsoring to get through Congress? The only thing recently that we've seen is the continuing resolution, and that's because the executive hasn't even gotten out spending reports on time like it was statutorily required to, so we could actually make a real budget. You know, I've been trying. We can work with the executive. Like, we're not unreasonable people. We've made compromises before. We did that on the last budget, for example. Mm-hmm. But there's no relationship. The executive is its own little world that's very frankly quite small now because it deteriorated the administration. A lot of people have left. A lot of people just aren't active anymore. And so we just can't have that anymore. We need somebody who has an active relationship with Congress. You know, I understand, like I worked with for example, President Garland, he vetoed one of my bills. But we still had a good relationship regardless. We could work well together. And of course you could say, well, he's on the left, of course, but you know, he still had an active relationship where he was actively communicating with members of Congress throughout most of his term. That's the kind of relationship I would like. I would like a very strong relationship with members of Congress, like, for example, Speaker Rose, who I work with practically every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll let up on that one for now. What are some... So you've talked about generally sort of the current White House not having much of a direction in your view, not pushing policies. What are some policy areas that you would focus on that don't necessarily get widespread attention as of this stage? What's something that you would bring more into the public view as president?
So there are a few things I definitely like to look at more. One is I'd like to look at immigration policy a lot more and like to build on the progress that was in the American Immigration Reform Act, but also take out some rather misguided policies about border security, specifically border fences and physical barriers. I don't think that's the direction we need, and that was in there. I don't know if that's been repealed or changed at all. I don't believe it has, but that's something I like to look at. Also, specifically, something I can do as the executive is definitely take a very critical eye of deportations and deportation policy. And if I were elected president, I would institute a moratorium on deportations until we get comprehensive progressive immigration reform through Congress. Because right now, the way deportations are set up, this is not in the best interest of certainly the immigrants, but also the American people, to be honest.
Okay. Let's talk about the road to the White House a little bit. Obviously, you are, as of right now, part of a three-person primary on the left with two SDP members in Governor Dett and Representative Darius. Yes, that's right. Okay. I can't keep track of who moves where these days.
yeah, Congress can be complicated.
The good guy that came from the north. So I guess my question for you, initially when it was just you and Governor Dett looking at facing off against each other, and then Congressman Darius came in with a dead of night rollout, which was its own issue that I'll probably chat with him about when he comes in here. But obviously it looked like it would kind of break down along party lines within the coalition of, okay, the SDP is going to line up behind Governor Dett and the GLP is behind you. Does having the three-person race change that dynamic at all? What do you see your path as within the coalition?
Yeah, so I definitely think any path to victory will especially for me, would require cross-party support. I believe I have that. I work well with members of the SDP. I have excellent relationships with the SDP base. I'm a big policy leader. You know, we're talking about all these issues that the SDP and GOP want that we've been fighting for. Well, I've been at the forefront of that for a lot of that. I'm there with student loan relief. I'm there passing and helping to get ratify the We the People Amendment. I'm there with public banking, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, you know, any objective SDP member can take a look at me and go, well, you know, maybe he's not SDP, which I don't think is a very big issue for, especially if I'm GLP, because we work so well together. But he's also pushing these issues we've been fighting for, and he can get stuff through Congress, and he can get stuff done, get meaningful, real proposals, you know, through. Like, for example, the Federal Economic Security Act, which established essentially really short-time compensation program, basically keeping people employed when otherwise they'd be fired. You know, that is meaningful, progressive legislation that even people on the right just straight up admitted, like, this has a good rationale, this has good logic, and even I can't really necessarily oppose this. And that's why the president signed it. And so I'll bring that record with me into the office, and any SUP member can look at me and go, oh, well, yeah, that is something I can get behind. You know, like, I have great relations with all the SCP members, and especially with Governor Ted and House Majority Leader Viper Darius. I work with all of them quite frequently. Any of them would be an excellent president. But I think I definitely have something to offer the voters in the primary and hopefully in the general election. And so I would encourage them definitely to take a strong look at me, regardless of what party you are.
This is a touch off topic, but as you mentioned, cross-party support, I figure this is a reasonable time to kind of get into this a little bit. Can you explain the functional difference between the SDP and the GOP? Because from the outside looking in, you guys are on lockstep pretty much the entire road, with the exception of the Senate filibuster when the SDP broke away to end that. But you're holding primaries together. You say, as you describe, you know, you're proposing all these policies that you all support as a collective. Is there anything that is like a meaningful maybe this is a better way of phrasing this. What are the issues that would cause that alliance of SDP and GLP to split on an issue? Or is it just really a difference in what color tie you wear when you walk into work and the letters next to your name when you go for an election?
I do enjoy the pink, but regardless, on issues, I think any reasonable observer can see the GOP as a whole is definitely more left-wing than the SCP. But when you talk about us working lock and step, you know, with each other, that's not like on accident. That's not just like it happened to work out that way. That is because the leaders of both parties and the members of both parties, fortunately, have made it a goal, have worked a lot to make sure that we work together on things and we have, you know, left-wing unity by and large. Of course, there's the question of the newer Workers Party. But regardless, so for example, we had a dispute in the Dixie Assembly recently between, you know, GLP and SCP members, and I had to step in as a party leader because it's part of my job to do what is best for the party, and what's best for the party right now is to have an excellent working relationship with the SCP. And that for the SCP, frankly, it's the same. And so when you're talking about these issues that we're pushing that we agree on, you know, we do have disagreements. They're not always public, of course, but we do have disagreements. But we make sure to settle those differences among each other and to come to a reasonable consensus with each other, especially when it comes to the public policy we push. We are always looking for feedback from people from both parties for that. So I would say GLP in general, we're more progressive, but we are, the policies we push are well within the realm of what the SCP could see as at least reasonable.
So what is the advantage of having the two-party system where you basically work out these issues internally before presenting a relatively united front to the public versus what, for example, the American Liberal Coalition tried for a time of having these different caucuses within the party that would work out these similar issues at the same time? Is there a goal of someday moving in different directions so that you have those clear dividing lines now? Or is there some sort of internal mechanic there that, once again, outside looking in, I'm just not really understanding what the benefit of dividing into public camps to then come together and really make, you know, one force together?
Well, the benefit is we get good public policy, or at least better public policy than we had before. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I voted on from SCP members where, you know, I might not completely agree with it necessarily, but I see it as clearly a step in the right direction. And so I'll vote for that. Right now, there's a lot of laws on the books still that need to be changed, there's a lot of policies that we need to do. Why would we spend our time fighting each other when there's so much more that we need to work on, you know, that we both agree needs to be changed and what direction that kind of needs to go in? So for us, it's not really, like, our unity isn't solely for, like, political gain. Of course, obviously it helps us in elections. But elections really are the bedrock of how we get good policy through eventually. But, you know, it's about the policy and, like, actually making differences. And if we operated in an antagonistic way with the SCP, especially when we had, you know, disagreements over, you know, not the direction we're going, but how much, you know, in a direction we're going, that would just be self-defeating. And that's not... And if I'm elected president, you know, I'm not going to let, you know, party difference, you know, get in the way of passing, you know, good policy. That's what this is all about. We're here to serve the people, not just to get elected and argue with each other.
Okay. We can, I'll let you go on the party leadership thread of this interview that I kind of spun off and get back to the campaign ideas.
Yeah.
Questions, that kind of thing. I've done too many of these. Words are getting hard.
You're good.
Two things. One, have you considered any vice presidential candidates? And as a sub question on that, would you consider either of your opponents to take one out?
To take one out, as in like, you mean to have
out of the running? Yes.
Oh, out of.
Would you consider putting forward Governor Dett or as House Majority Leader to get them out of the running for the nomination?
Oh, well, I wouldn't do that to get them out of the running of the nomination. Of course, if they were to come to me and say, oh, you know, I'd like to be a VP and I'd like to drop out, you know, I'd consider that. But really, I'm pretty confident in the abilities of both of them, so I don't see a reason to do that, because they're excellent politicians. I frankly love both of them. They make excellent presidents, as I said before. As for VP, I have considered a few people so far, but right now it's definitely there's definitely a few people in the running, so I'll have to take a look at that. But I won't even, you know, make any guesses.
Tease any names.
Yeah. No, I can't even tease anything right now, because my number one goal right now is just to win the GOP SDP joint nomination. That's my goal. After that, we can look at that.
Fair enough. Would you consider serving as VP if you were not chosen as the nominee?
I think that's a hard question, because
that's what we do here.
Yes, thank you. That's good. I would be probably reluctant to do it, but I'd have to make a decision based on the circumstances, as they are, if that were offered to me.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Final question that I try to always end these presidential interview or candidate interviews with: what do you consider the biggest obstacle to you winning the White House right now?
That's a good question. I think the biggest obstacle right now would definitely be, frankly, especially what just recently happened with the Libertarian Republican Party and that whole charade, would be somebody trying to, frankly, circumvent the We the People Amendment or something like that to try and get some kind of advantage based on corporate money instead of, you know, the actual support from real people. You know, we know for a fact that, you know, at least one very high level Libertarian Republican Party official has already been trying pretty diligently to find a workaround. And then there's also pretty good evidence that it's been at least heavily discussed among a lot of the other leadership. So if I were to win the SCP GOP nomination, I think that would be something I'm worried about. And frankly, I do hope that, you know, if the Libertarian Republican Party has any, you know, basic decency, they'll release some records about their discussions about the We the People Amendment, because it should be concerning really to everybody. But that would be it.
I guess I have to kind of once again rephrase that in maybe a less favorable light, just for the sake of me playing the both sides media here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're saying that, given that you win the nomination, the most likely reason you would lose is if your opponents cheated. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's not necessarily, not cheating.
Because what I'm saying, the way that you phrase it is,
because
if they manage to find a legal workaround of the election rules, that's how you lose.
No, I just say that's what I'm most concerned about right now. It might be unreasonable. It could be a completely unreasonable fear. I know people typically tend to, when people fear things, they tend to fear the more extreme things. But I think besides that, under normal circumstances, definitely something that would prevent me from winning could possibly be my more, I would say, trying to find the right word for it. I'll say strong reputation. I know that for a lot of people on the right, I can be a divisive figure because I've been pushing progressive policy that I find very to the people that I serve. And so that could definitely turn off some people who might otherwise be attracted to a more moderate figure, which I think, you know, by and large, while you know, me and Ted, for example, Governor Ted, have a lot of overlap, he does come off as a more moderate figure in general. And I think most people can kind of see that. But besides that, I'm pretty confident in my chances. You know, we've done excellent congressional elections so far. You know, I'm not implying that there's anything, you know, illegal going on in the Libertarian Republican Party at all. I just think that it would be immoral just to try and circumvent, you know, the Constitution like that, even if it's legal. Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so, thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah.
That's kind of all I have. Anything you would like to discuss while I have you here? We went long.
Yeah, we tend to do that. I tend to do that. I can definitely ramble.
Hey, that's why I like having you on.
Thank you. Yeah, not much else. I just recommend people definitely take a look at me as a candidate for the SCP GOP nomination and hopefully in the general election. I'll be publishing a platform pretty soon. It's pretty much finished. I just need to get it in the right format. Other than that, thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And good luck out on there on the trail.
Thank you very much.
Congressman Darius, welcome to the Weekly.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad we can get you in. I want to start off just obviously with kind of the big question. Why are you running for president? And why is this your moment compared to everyone else's?
Well, I thought about this for a while, and I think that, first of all, we need a left-wing president that has shown initiative. So I think that in my time as a congressman, in being a chief legislator, I've pushed for policies that I believe have helped the American people, specifically the Coronavirus Aid and Recovery Act. Now, one could argue that I don't have the necessary executive experience to be a president. However, in my view, a president is more than just a chief executive. A president has to do with dealing with legislation, understanding foreign policy, and understanding diplomacy and negotiation. And even during the time when we had a divided government, when we had the Senate being controlled by the Libertarians, when we knew that the Libertarians controlled the presidency, I was able to work hard with Speaker Rose to ensure that we were able to pass a monumental stimulus bill. I think that's the kind of initiative we need for the next president okay. of the United States.
What is a couple of policy areas that you would look to bring to the forefront of the White House that is not necessarily there now or that the other candidates right now are not offering?
Okay, so I believe that when it comes to our policies, we generally agree. However, I think in terms of what I want to prioritize, it has to do mostly with stimulus packages, specifically in the restaurant industry. That's a large part of the economy. For example, the service sector accounts for more than half of the American economy. And while our relief packages have been short-term spending bills, like with FISA that Senator Epstein had passed, or the Coronavirus Aid and Recovery Act, that's not necessarily the only way to deal with an economic recovery. You need to invest in the service sector. We need to invest in the manufacturing industry and potentially the healthcare industry that may have had losses over time because of the coronavirus pandemic. So my goal as president is to focus directly on that and also directly focus on data through committees in the House that I have pushed for. And I want to do that as president as well.
Okay. You mentioned investing in industries, and obviously right now we are hopefully coming to the end or at least in the middle of a pretty tense budget negotiation between the more right. conservative White House and the left-controlled Congress in terms of whether or not this is an appropriate time for deficit spending. Right. What's your position on that, and how are those negotiations looking right now?
Well, first of all, we were in a difficult position to negotiate because based on Title V of the budget, from December, the federal agencies were meant to provide Congress with reports to tell us how much money was being spent from each department, and we didn't get those monies, or we didn't get those the spending reports on time, so it made it very difficult for us to negotiate on anything. So we had to pass a continuing resolution, and after we get those spending reports, we can continue to negotiate. Now, on the topic of deficit spending, I think my stance is that while it is true that in the long term, you want to avoid deficit spending, in the short term, when it comes to dealing with recession or dealing with economic downturns, deficit spending is needed, or large amounts of spending is needed in order to deal with the economy. In my view, we haven't been spending enough. Yes, we have spent on long-term or short-term spending with stimulus packages, but giving every adult $1,400, while it's a good bill, it's a good move forward, that's a short-term spending plan. What we have to realize is that the transport industry has to be dealt with it, which is why I was proud to work with Representative Soren to work on the Transport Relief Act. I want to aid in the healthcare industry, specifically how has that been impacted? How can we help to revitalize that? I also want to aid in providing funds for the agriculture industry and the energy industry as we move towards a more green economy as well. So long-term spending plans is what I want to focus on.
Okay. Can you talk about your decision, kind of moving to the primary now?
Right.
Generally, campaign rollouts are kind of timed for getting the most coverage and getting all of this, all of the attention toward the campaign for that first initial couple of days. I was surprised to see you declare kind of in the dead of night your candidacy. Can you explain the campaign's decision behind your rollout, and how do you think this period between your announcement and right now has gone?
Well, I think one of the reasons that our campaign has been working so late is because we've been juggling so many different things at the same time. First of all, in dealing with the budget, we've been spending time day in and day out working on specific provisions within the budget. And also with the campaign, working on materials is not necessarily an easy thing to do. I wanted it to happen not necessarily at a time of activity. I wanted to just settle in. And when the campaign was done, I thought that, you know, as soon as we got that out, even if it was 2 a.m., I thought it was fine, because eventually people were able to wake up and they saw that the campaign was fully running after Ted had announced and after Senator Epsilon had announced. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, you know, we've had some support from others within the left, and I've been treated with respect between the candidates that I'm running against, with Senator Epsilon and Governor Ted.
Okay. I should say we're recording this Sunday afternoon, and my understanding from speaking with Epsilon last night was that the primary process is starting to come toward an end here. Initially, my expectation was that when the race was just between Senator Dett and, former Senator Dett, Governor Dett and Senator Epsilon, was that the party coalition would basically split into their corners. So the SDP would go with the governor and the GLP would go with Epsilon, and it would kind of just come down to numbers. Does having yourself as a second SDP member complicate that math? What is your coalition looking like right now as the primary goes on?
Well, I would say this. I don't think it's necessarily about the SDP and the GLP, because I can tell you for a fact that I worked closely with both the SDP and the GLP. In the budget negotiations, I worked very closely with Speaker Rose and Senator Epsilon to pass a very important piece of legislation. And I've worked directly in party negotiations, as well as in dealing with the Northern policies in revitalizing the economy there. So I've built relations over time, both between the GLP and the SDP. And so my campaign is not about whether you're a GLP member or whether you're an SDP member. It's about having a goal for striving for better, which is what my campaign is about. It's about increasing the standards for our government. Before I came into office, we didn't have any data. We didn't have anyone pushing for data regarding the economy. And since I came in the office, we tried to push for that through legislation that I had passed. We pushed for a more detailed budget since recent history, since 2018. And we passed for a more comprehensive left that is willing to be stubborn and willing to fight for things that the previous left might not have been willing to fight for. So that's what I'm running on. It's the idea of striving for better regardless of whether you're a GLP member or an STB member.
Okay. Last question I usually ask to wrap up these presidential candidate interviews. What would you consider, as of right now, your biggest obstacle to winning the White House?
Well, first of all, I'm looking at the primary, and I think I have to say that I have respect for Governor Ted and Senator Epstein. They're both very popular politicians. My biggest obstacle is to make the case to the American people that even though I am a new politician, that I have the qualifications to be president of the United States, because the presidency is not just about experience at the executive level. It's about understanding foreign policy. It's about having a general understanding of legislation. It's also about being able to negotiate effectively. And it's about, it's challenging to make that case because it's an unorthodox position to be in, to be a representative and then running for president and ending up winning. So that is a big obstacle, but I hope that I can make my case. And if I make my case well, maybe we can see something happen.
Okay. Anything else that you would like to chat about while I have you here?
I don't really have anything else to add. I thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. I thank all the listeners for listening to me talk about the campaign. And I wish everyone the best.
All right. Thank you very much. And good luck out there on the trail.
Thank you.
Here's what else you need to know this week. Leaked conversations showed that recent Jefferson gubernatorial candidate Computer Guy sought ways to work around the recently ratified We the People Amendment, which seeks to remove much financial influence from elections, including by sending contributions overseas. Additionally, the Sandoval administration secured the release of General Motors executive Salvatore Basile from Chinese authorities. This followed a reduction in American naval forces in the Pacific, which had been increased due to recent tensions between the two powers. Some international allies decried the move as taking a softened stance on hostage diplomacy, though all welcomed the return of Mr. Basile. I would like to once again thank all the candidates who were able to come on the show. Please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to get the latest episodes with the biggest news straight to your feeds. The Weekly is a public record podcast.